listening to Trending with Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timory holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Good to be back in studio with all of you. A happy new year. Father Tim Grumbach is here with me from St. Augustine Parish in Los Angeles.
It's always good to be back, and especially with this new year, getting something new started.
So we hope you've been enjoying the latest episodes of Trending. We had recorded one a little before the Christmas vacation. I hope all of you had a wonderful Christmas. And we really talked about this theme of my lousy Catholic lifestyle and how we're maybe failing to embrace it and dive in and appreciate the richness of our faith. So if you missed that episode as you're enjoying your holiday, please do go back and check out radiotrending.com for the latest episode. I think it's very beneficial. So Father Tim, just a couple weeks ago, so I'm in the middle of planning a wedding. My sister's getting married 2 weeks before me. In fact, you're marrying her.
Yeah, I'm doing the wedding. I'm witnessing the marriage.
You're witnessing the marriage.
Yes. We know what you mean.
Yeah. Clarification here. Everyone's like, wait, what are you saying, Timory? So Father Tim's going to be a part of those festivities. But I had like a couple, like maybe half an hour of downtime. And I had my phone on or my TV on in the background as I was trying to take notes for something, preparing. And Netflix, they updated the Netflix on Apple TV. The Netflix, I just said that. Oh, how embarrassing.
Like the Twitter.
The YouTube.
Definite article required.
But I was sitting here trying to focus, and at the same time, every single title on Netflix's like home screen would just automatically start playing a video. And I am just trying to focus, and I just happen to have the TV on, and I'm like not a good multitasker at all. But same thing with on your computer now. If you use Netflix, you don't click on something, it plays it for you, a preview.
Yeah, you're going to get an automatic trailer. And we were just talking about this, was you could spend 20 or 30 minutes just watching trailers trying to figure out which movie you want to watch on Netflix. And, you know, not that I would know this by any experience at all. Okay, yes. And, you know, I say, oh, okay, I got a couple hours I can watch a movie, and already a half hour is gone because I'm watching trailers trying to figure out which movie I want to watch. And so they've got our brains dialed in. They know how to keep us attentive and hooked onto it, don't they?
Well, the whole media industry is the only industry outside of the drug industry that refers to their consumers, customers as users. So we're real users here. It's just kind of like a bit of an eye-opening. But it made me think, Father Tim, about how distraction is such a huge thing in terms of getting in the way of growing in our faith, or even just meeting our basic fundamental human needs like sleep and food even.
Yeah, we weren't made for distraction, were we?
No.
You know, we find so many ways to distract ourselves from the life that's right in front of us, from the silence that God calls us into. You know, there's that beautiful book by Cardinal Sarah, The Power of Silence. And
it's still sitting on my shelf.
You'll get a chance. It takes some time. It's not something you can just run through and just grab and read every, you know, for a couple minutes every day. It's something you need to really invest a lot of time into. But it gives us this image that, you know, heaven is complete silence, that the truest language of God is silent love. That kind of goes against our image of, you know, the choirs of angels always singing God's praises. But there's a real truth to this idea that, you know, heaven is silence, and that's what we're made for, this act of silent love, eternal silent love. And so we have found so many ways to distract ourselves from silence and distract ourselves from love, because it takes more work. It's harder. It's more difficult than the distractions that are placed in front of us. We don't even have to go looking for distractions now. Like you said, they're going to pop up and play instant trailers for us, whether or not we like it.
And, you know, remembering that and talking about this, I think is so important, especially because this year you were telling me about a really awesome program that you're about to start on that's part of your Lenten journey.
Yeah, some friends of mine, some men want to get together and start Exodus 90. And if you haven't heard of Exodus 90, it's something that's been put together. It's for men. So I believe there's another version of it called the Nineveh 90, which invites women into it as well. But the Exodus 90 is, they call it kind of a spiritual boot camp. I'm not overly fond of that description, but it's meant to be a difficult time of ascetical living for 90 days, following the journey of Exodus, adding prayer to our daily lives, anywhere from 20 to 60 minutes more of prayer every day. And it requires giving up a lot and living a very ascetical lifestyle over these 90 days, because they understand the concept that, you know, if you're doing something for 90 days, it's going to rewire your brain. It's going to rewire the way that you live and view the world. And taking the story of Exodus as a model of entering into this desert and having less than what we had, you know, kind of grown used to having. So there's all kind of sacrifices that, you know, we make.
And you know what's wonderful about this? It's 90 days. So in reality, we need a minimum of a month to really begin to form a habit.
Right.
So the goal is that a lot of this is going to interpret into regular habits in your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. And let me share with you some of the things that we're going to be giving up. The first thing on the list, it's right at the top of the list, is, you know, cold showers. Not that we're giving up cold showers. We're embracing the cold showers. Well, they give you some leeway. It says cold or lukewarm showers and short showers as well. My friends, we wanted to start on January 1st, but the organization is inviting the men to begin on January 21st so that the last day will be Easter Sunday. So it's kind of a long Lent. But, you know, right there at the top of that list is cold showers. And so some of us have taken on some of the sacrifices already beginning on the 1st. But I think most of us are holding off to the 21st for that one. But other things are no sodas or sweetened drinks, no alcohol, which is, you know, won't be too difficult for me. I already don't drink. But, you know, maybe there's some other sacrifices that I can take on. No watching sports unless you get permission from
the
group.
Or any television, actually.
Right, yes. Or movies. So, you know, I won't be having those Netflix distractions right in front of me. Praise be to God. but then it also requires of us to get 7 hours of sleep at least a night. Because it recognizes...
I'm lacking that right now.
yeah. Well, that's what I've already begun with. And my life has changed so much just over a week.
Skin looks really good, Father.
Yeah, how are my nails and everything like that? Yeah. But the way that it feels just after a week of being more intentional about, you know, I'm not going to, you know, be procrastinating all night on Twitter and just so that, you know, because as soon as you go to sleep, the next day starts, right?
Right.
And so if you're stressed about the next day, you're just going to stay up. But this way I'm very intentional. I'm getting to bed by, you know, 10 or 10:30, which is really early for me right now. And I'm getting up at 6, which is not exactly, you know, super early compared to how I used to get up at 4 a.m. every morning at the seminary. The guys thought I was crazy. but it's done so much for the energy that I have during the day to know that, I've got this time of day set aside for prayer. I've got this, I'm getting this rest that I've been so sorely lacking since I got into the parish and began my priesthood. And so it's already been a week, and I'm not even officially entered into this. And so it's so much more than a New Year's resolution.
It sounds like you're bringing in the discipline you need, that we all need, to live our day-to-day life, staying healthy, eating correctly, sleeping, working on avoiding distractions by what we place in our lives. That's Father Tim Grumbach. I'm Timory Millington. You're listening to Trending. Father Tim is talking about the Exodus 90 Challenge for men. You can find it at Exodus 90. That's the number 90.com. I'm really going to challenge and invite men to step into this, because what I love is that it really is in many ways kind of pointing toward that monastic lifestyle. In fact, it's really kind of inspired by the Desert Fathers and this monasticism that is so important. And I know for me, having that monastic formation myself, because I actually attended a summer-long formation program called the Ecclesia Institute that focused on developing that regular prayer life. Like Father said, that minimum of a holy hour every day. Maybe that's a half hour for you, but setting aside that time, you know, bringing in the Liturgy of the Hours as well, different things like this that teach us how to live our lives monastically, meditatively, as contemplative Catholics, and be able to handle everything that life throws at us.
And I like that you mentioned the idea of it's monastic. And so something that's monastic, it's something that's lived within community. And I think that's one of the great dangers of New Year's resolutions. New Year's resolutions are something that often that someone takes on by themselves And they may have some kind of support structure there, but it's not something they're doing within a community typically. And so it's much easier to fall away from that. You know, the Exodus 90, the Ecclesia experience are something that's done where you're praying in community. You're meeting with these people over and over again, being able to share how your experience is. And so you're not doing it by yourself. And so, you know, a lot of the sacrifices that we make, it just falls by the wayside because we feel that we've failed ourselves. But when we have this accountability within a community. So I'm doing it with four other men, at least. That's where we're at right now.
And this Nina, or the Exodus 90 program is meant to be done in groups of small men, so you can meet one-on-one or in person as well.
Right. And so you have a close relationship and you can ask one another permission. The Super Bowl is going to be during this time. And we haven't talked yet about that, but are we going to give each other permission to watch the Super Bowl? Or are we going to accept this as a sacrifice that we're being called to as a group to set aside something that we've grown so used to so that we can feel this, we can feel this experience. You know, I think I may be willing to sacrifice the Super Bowl for this, but it's a conversation that we're going to have. And it's important to be able to have that conversation in community. You know, all of monastic life, you know, there are times where an individual is by themselves and in silent prayer and that act of silent love being the language between us and God, but it has to happen within a community. Even the hermits in the desert fathers had communities they were a part of. You know, it wasn't something they did by themselves. You know, they needed the prayers of their brothers and sisters as well.
You know, speaking of hermits, I'll never forget this in some of my formation. I remember when I was doing one of the Eagle Eye Ministry programs, which Ecclesia Institute is a part of. Really go check that out. If you're a young adult and you're looking for a way to grow in your faith, they have not just a full summer-long formation program, but they also have a weekend and 2 week and 10 or 2 week and 10 day long programs. Check it out at eagleeyeministries.org. But one of the things that one of the religious brothers from this community, the community of St. John, said, he had just finished 3 months living as a hermit as part of his formation. He had come out and he was confused why people wanted to stay up at night and like watch a movie, because one of the nights during the program, it was a movie night. And he said, you know, it's really quite simple. You go to bed when it's dark and you wake up when it's light. And it just made me laugh so hard, because he's been living this lifestyle of like a rigorous discipline, and he's recognizing that there's actually something very natural to cutting out the distractions and sometimes even the things we're searching for to add on to our life. We'll be right back.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Timory here. Father Tim Grumbach is right here in the studio with me, and I just wanted to let you all know that coming up, I have a couple events I'm speaking at. One is actually this weekend. It's a women's brunch for the Magnifica organization for their meeting here in Southern California in San Diego. It'll be on the 12th of January. I'm really excited to be speaking there, talking about a little bit of my testimony from dancing, even some of the monastic formation that I myself have experienced, among other things. Also coming up, I'm really excited for all you young adults out there. We've been talking about Eagle Eye Ministries and other programs, but here in Southern California is the University Catholic Conference of California, which is kind of the first time in a while it's been in Southern California. So that's the weekend just following Valentine's Day. Again, University Catholic Conference of California. You can find that. And I'll be speaking in March in Texas. So all of you listeners out there in Texas, go head over to my Facebook page at Timory to find out more details about the Pro Family Congress taking place out there. So, Father Tim, it's ordinary time now. And I find that a lot of people, like, this is how they live their Catholic faith. Oh my gosh, it's Christmas. Oh my gosh, it's Lent. I need to give up soda. And then there's nothing else in between. Maybe those are the times where they actually go to church or maybe try to pay attention to the readings. And you said when we were talking the other day that maybe these are the times when people know what stories to expect as well in the readings at Mass.
Yeah, sometimes we treat Jesus as if he was born and then he died. And that everything else that he did during the rest of his life had nothing else to do with it. But one of my favorite scripture scholars to read is, you know, he's an Anglican bishop, is N.T. Wright.
Mm-hmm. And
one of his most important key points is that what Jesus did during his earthly ministry mattered. You know, it wasn't that he was born, he died and rose again, and then nothing else. At most, it would just signify, you know, the coming of the kingdom. But no, the kingdom was breaking into the world through Jesus's ministry. And that's what we're looking at during ordinary time, is that, you know, we have these beautiful moments of Advent and Christmas time, you know, Christmas, which begins on Christmas itself and goes, we're still in Christmas time right now. You know, the season of Christmas doesn't end until this coming Sunday, which is the baptism of the Lord. And then we've got Lent and, you know, the long Lent of 40 days, 40 plus days, if you want to count the Sundays. And then we as Catholics are so great because we, you know, you think Lent is long. Well, Easter lasts for 50 days. And so, you know.
But people forget that too. Yeah. They're like, oh, okay, great. It was Easter. I get my Easter candy and it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't start Christmas until Christmas Day. It's not something that begins at the beginning of, you know, or as soon as Thanksgiving is over.
No,
or
Halloween. Come
even.
On.
Halloween. Sorry. Sorry. And then those are the only seasons that we can think of. And we think of, oh, ordinary time, how boring, you know. And then even the color green becomes boring because we think of ordinary time as boring.
It's my favorite color, man.
I know. It's a color of life, you know. And when it's oh, it can be so beautiful. Ordinary time not being, oh, it's just not the time when it's Christmas and Easter and everything like that. But ordinary time is the time when we're celebrating what's happening throughout the rest of Jesus' life, because that's so important. That's the kingdom breaking into this world through his ministry, through his teaching, through his healing. There's people bringing people back from the dead, you know, casting out demons. There's a lot happening in between the birth and the death that is not just signifying, but is an active part of the bringing of the kingdom.
And especially if you're attending daily mass, you're also reading all of these readings from the Old and New Testament, and you're seeing all of salvation history. You know, I think we remember, you know, the cute versions of maybe the child Bible version of Abraham and Moses. And we have, you know, different imagery like Isaac being sacrificed and Moses being put into a little wicker basket. But do we know the deeper significance of those stories, where their lives led to and so much more, maybe where they started? You know, this is the opportunity in ordinary time. You know, don't just make it. I love during Lent, I read the newly published meditations that were gathered together of Blessed Cardinal Henry Newman and Waiting for Christ. It was great to have something, a companion to check and remember, this is Advent, but now it's ordinary time. And so my question to you is, what are you doing? And like at the beginning of the show, what's maybe distracting you? It might not be Netflix popping up. It might not be Twitter, you know, at the end of the night. It might be something else. It might be the people you're around. It might be, you know, the things that you're watching. You know, maybe you're working too much. I think that's a big issue we're going to be talking about as well.
Yeah, it takes a lot of humility to look at the things that we use to distract ourselves in our lives and just say, why is this a part of my life? You know, like we were talking about the Exodus 90 thing, and a part of it is getting off of social media for the most part. You know, that'll be a major part of my experience is, you know, I'm already for the most part off of Twitter, still getting some DMs and interacting with some people, but I'm not on the timeline. And it was really humbling to recognize the way that I was using it as distraction. You know, I'm not doing anything for 5 seconds and my phone is in my hand and I'm on Twitter before I even realize what I've done. And so ordinary.
But we're doing so much good to evangelize the world by posting our political content and our Bible verses. And there's some great element to that. And that is so true. So many conversions have taken place. But at the same time, we ourselves maybe just need to post something and get off, you know?
Yeah. And recognizing during this ordinary time, this beginning of the year, is maybe we can do more good by stepping away from it, praying, sacrificing, fasting for the people that we've met, because the relationships are, I've gotten to meet some people, as they say, are IRL in real life. I have some IRL friends
Thank
now.
Thank you for interpreting, because I wouldn't have gotten that one.
Yeah. So I got some IRL friends that I've met on Twitter. And as one of my very good friends says, oh, you're talking about your internet friends, huh? You know, you got to be careful with those priests you meet on the internet.
I remember one episode you came on, you're like, they're real friends. They're real friendships. And it's true. They are. But person to person, face to face really does matter. And that silence matters. Mm-hmm. That uncomfortableness, even of being in another person's presence in silence and maybe not knowing what to say, but choosing to be, you know, I'm at peace just to be with you right now.
Yeah. And knowing to be apart from that community that's been formed on Twitter and praying and fasting and sacrificing for them. You know, we've got to remember that that's powerful stuff too. And so I just came to a place in my prayer where I'm thinking, you know, and I really feel that God is speaking to me on this, is that, you know, I can do more through my prayer and fasting, my absence, than I can with my presence. Mm-hmm. And that's painful. I have to trust that God is going to do something with my time away from that.
But you just gave your prayer and fasting meaning. You're offering it up for an intention, for a person. You know, I think a lot of people struggle with fasting because they think, oh, I'm just fasting. Well, a lot of different cultures and religions all over the world, even a lot of the older Eastern religions, fast as well. But what is so transformative about the Christian religion and our fasting, We are offering it up to be united with Christ. We are offering it up to be united to Christ and offer it for the sake of someone else who is suffering. Maybe, you know, or just talking to someone whose, you know, family member had a miscarriage and they've got cancer in the family and all these different things going on. These are people who can be transformed by their suffering right now. And so many of us can if we open the door for that.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that we can point to about the difference between like a New Year's resolution and, you know, this prayer and this fasting within a community, kind of a monastic setting, is that, you know, New Year's resolutions, maybe being something we do individually for ourselves, it very easily becomes about self-improvement.
Right.
Fasting is not necessarily about self-improvement. Self-improvement will come, but if that's the focus, if it's not, I'm sacrificing this in as a prayer for somebody who's suffering, or to keep my eyes on heaven rather than on earth, you know, but if it starts from a place of self-improvement, I suppose God can work with that. Mm-hmm. But it's got to begin from a place of this sacrifice is happening. I'm giving this meaning by praying for this person. When I'm starting to get hungry, or when I'm offered something that I've given up, that becomes a prayer. Our sacrifice becomes a prayer rather than a matter of self-improvement.
Take us with you. You can turn your mobile phone into a radio by heading over to radiotrending.com or choosing your favorite podcast app and listening to Trending. Father Tim, we're going to get real serious here. You know, it's ordinary time, and something I like to really turn back to is the fact that we have to remember we're all going to die at some point, and some of us much sooner than others. And there is actually a religious sister online who has been talking, especially for about the last year, about the importance of remembering your death.
Yeah, Sister Teresa Alethea, especially on her Twitter, has, you know, started the Memento Mori hashtag over the last year plus. I remember when she started doing this, what she had done was she had, you know, been inspired by the founder of the Daughters of St. Paul,
right,
her order, and begun to put a skull on her desk, you know, like a model skull. I don't know. She seems the type that maybe if she could get a real skull, she's that cool.
She actually took it from some of the sisters' Halloween decorations,
okay, yeah,
from an event is what I was reading.
Yeah. I had an opportunity to meet her and talk to her a little bit about this. And it's really inspiring because it's not just kind of trying to be edgy. This is a real deep Catholic tradition, Memento Mori, which in Latin, you know, can be translated. I like to translate it a couple different ways. Is remember you will die is one of the translations. My favorite is remember to die. It's in a sense of like, remember how to die.
Yeah,
and the idea is to keep these images, especially of a skull, a human skull in front of us, these images of death, not as a matter of glorifying death, but as a matter of remembering that death has been defeated and we can have it there in front of us and know that, you know, that's what I'm destined for in this world, but I'm also destined for eternal life.
Yeah. Remember your death. And I think that especially in light of a world that is so focused on eliminating pain, dying on our own terms, and they try to put words like dignity onto this. But in reality, if we focus on the salvific purpose, the goal, like our goal actually kind of is to die, to live and to die, right? Both intertwined into one. It's like, you know, Jesus brought about the kingdom of heaven and it's present now, but it's not yet fully attained by us. Same thing with life and death. The two are meant to be interconnected day to day. And that's why one of the things I was reading in an interview is she was talking about how if we remember our death, she said, it really gives us the grace to change immediately, mm-hmm, rather than saying, oh yeah, you know, when I'm older, maybe when I'm retired, I'll start going to daily mass, or, you know, these different things that we kind of start to say, or when I have time, or I'm too busy right now.
Yeah. And it points back to this idea of the ordinary time that we're in right now,
yeah,
and how we can caught up in thinking that's just regular, boring time. But everything that Jesus does points towards his passion. Everything that he does within the lens of his passion, even his birth, you know, all the images from the three magi, you know, everything is pointing to his passion, you know, even the gifts that they bring. The gold, the frankincense, and the myrrh being this anointment for embalming, that mm-hmm, even from the moment when he was laid in a wooden manger, they were preparing him to be laid on a wooden cross.
That gives vocation to your life right mm-hmm, away. It gave mm-hmm, it to Jesus's.
Right. From the very, very beginning, everything is pointing towards the passion.
Where can people find you on Twitter, Father Tim?
At FR Tim Grumbach, although I'm going to be away until Easter, but I'm there.
I'll be retweeting Father for him while he's away.
Oh, thank you.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Coming coming up a little later in the show, we'll be talking about reconciliation, right? The sacrament of confession, or maybe you know it as penance. All three are the same thing. I think people often confuse. They're like, no, I'm looking for the sacrament of penance. You know, the same thing, just a different words for the same sacrament. We'll be talking about that a little later, about lying in confession. And also some people, you know, there's some confusion. Am I receiving absolution when I go to confession if the words of absolution are mumbled or maybe some of the words seem to be missing? So don't worry, we'll be talking about, you don't want to miss it. Father Tim Grumbach is in studio with me, and I want to challenge you guys. You know, we're in a new year, and 2018 was really challenging. Some of the things we saw and the moral breakdown of society, you know, we see, you know, San Francisco just decided to implement, you know, their new transgender district, the first transgender district. We're looking at New York City, who I think earlier in the year, maybe the year before, said, okay, we're going to do gender neutral driver's license. But now they're also in the new year doing gender neutral birth certificates, even to the point where you want to change it, you can, Father Tim. Or if you're a baby, the parents can change that and put an X on their baby's birth certificate as non-binary.
Yeah, it's not just a matter of, you know, when the child is born, you get to decide that it gets to decide. You get to decide it's not one or the other. But rather, as an adult, a person can, you know, decide for themselves that, you know, even though this has been on my birth certificate my whole life, I don't identify that way, and I'm going to change my very birth certificate.
Yeah. You know, and one other thing, kind of looking at this, because I want to throw these at you to really look at. A prisoner in, I think, what is it? I can't remember what state it is right now, but a prisoner in, not in California, I want to say it's like Idaho or somewhere. We're going to pull that up.
It's Idaho.
Yeah, it's in Idaho. This prisoner, the state has ordered for this man to be castrated so that he can be jailed as a woman. And so apparently this guy clearly is struggling mentally. I have to be very clear, and medically needs, you know, to be given attention. But the answer, just because he's maybe attempted to castrate himself or struggling, is not to castrate him and now put him with the women. That's not the answer. I mean, there's a difference in strength. And we know, you know, already different parts of prison and jail system can be dangerous. I think it's pretty dangerous putting a man with a woman, even if he is castrated, you know. I don't think that's helping him. And so that we see these things, Father Tim, and we're very blessed because you and I recognize that the antidote, the answer to all of this, is bringing Christ and truth and reason back into the culture. But that's not going to happen if we don't choose to do something about it.
Yeah, and we have the language of sin as well, that we recognize where so much of this discontent, this sadness, this loneliness is coming from, is knowing God's plan for our, you know, built into us as men and women, but also recognizing that there's a brokenness, and that there are people who are genuinely having this experience of gender dysphoria, but that it seems to be on the rise in ways that, you know, some scientific studies haven't quite nailed down yet. But some studies are being, you know, pushed aside because they're suggesting that this is something that's a cultural phenomenon.
A cultural phenomenon, yeah, abuse, yeah, in a person's past, mm-hmm, mental disorders. Like before, it used to always be classified as a gender dysphoria. And now there's such a political push to say, no, this is who a person is. Mm-hmm. Yet in reality, you have people like Walt Heyer, who you can find his work at sexchangeregret.com, where he talks about how, no, I've lived this lifestyle. I've lived wanting to live as a woman. I lived and chose to have a sex change. And I recognize that mentally, physically, psychologically, all these different elements, it was not good for me. And he now tells a story of many men and women who also have regret after having attempted to transition, recognizing that you really can't transition. It's a sickness that needs to be helped, not something to put a Band-Aid on by just giving someone a different type of genital body part.
Yeah, and what I'm recognizing in all of this, you know, looking at the New York birth certificate issue, this issue in Idaho in the prisons with transgenderism, is the power of language. And especially, you know, what this man has been trying to do to himself in prison, we can legitimately call castration. But the language that's being used by the media is that, you know, the surgery, which is, you know, being recommended at, you know, using taxpayers' money, I believe,
yep,
is, you know, the surgery will, and this is the language that's used, restructure her physical characteristics to match her gender identity. And so,
ignoring the fact, yeah, that it's a man,
there's a difference there between castration and restructuring physical characteristics to match gender identity. And, you know, again, whenever I speak about this, I have to be really serious about and pastoral about recognizing that, you know, people have this experience. And so, right, so I'm still working on the best way to express this. But I think it's really important that we recognize the way that language is used. Again, politically, the language here is being used that this is a requirement under our Constitution, and they need to start evaluating people appropriately and providing care to them.
But the requirement, just to be clear, under the Constitution mm-hmm. is that every right. prisoner and any person jailed should receive proper medical attention, that they can't be neglected. And so mm-hmm. now they're trying to claim that this restructuring, this castration, what it truly is adequate medical attention. But medical attention also requires, you know, a psychologist mm-hmm. coming in, mm-hmm. working with a prisoner, trying to help the person flourish.
Right. And again, this goes back to a matter of the language of how this is necessary. How is it necessary medically to take away a properly functioning part of one's body in order to help with what they're calling gender confirmation? Again, this all sounds like a dangerous use of language, which has never been used before, but is almost being weaponized.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, psychologically, for years, we have treated this as dysphoria. Just like if a person thinks that they're missing one of their limbs, but is not missing a limb, we're trying to work with them to understand, no, you actually do have two legs. You don't just have one leg. You know, if an adult suddenly has a stroke and cannot remember who his spouse is or who his children are, we work with great love to remember, oh no, you know, I'm your daughter, I'm your son, you know, I'm your spouse, kind of helping them to understand reality for what it is. Because a person's brain, we contribute to healing of the brain by speaking what is real. Mm-hmm. But when we speak in untruth, we create further confusion for the brain to heal.
Right. And what also will be coming up as you know, you mentioned healing is, you know, what is the purpose of these prisons? You know, and this is a whole nother conversation about, you know, difference between rehabilitation or retributive justice. Again, another conversation to be had. But right. looking at some of the numbers thrown out in this article that we have in front of us is that it's saying that it looks like in the Idaho Department of Correction, there are around 30 other prisoners, it says, who are also suffering from gender dysphoria. That doesn't strike me as a common, you know, the common number and statistic in the rest of society, but maybe it is becoming that way. And so those questions need to be asked, whether or not this is a cultural phenomenon, or is it
a desire to be imprisoned with women or imprisoned with the women instead? Because we have seen some examples of this. Yeah. People who are choosing, you know, it's both ends. It's some people who culturally are looking for attention. Some people are saying, well, maybe this is an option. Maybe the body parts can, I mean, to be blunt, screw around whatever way they want to. You know, this idea of liberation, you know, babies we've taken out of sex. We've taken sex outside of marriage. Well, people are searching for meaning in their bodies when that meaning and that vocation's been destroyed. And so it's not surprising when people are experimenting, but also when people really are sick as well. And we have to remember that people are struggling psychologically. And so we need to be better at giving solutions, not band-aids that contribute to the problem, such as this quote-unquote restructuring of a person's body parts to match their identity.
And we're looking at this from a philosophical point of view too, is that if you can, like you said, you know, use different body parts and just, you know, mix and match and everything like that, then our body doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we choose what kind of body we want to have. And this is almost, you know, reaching all the way back to this Greek dualism that Christianity has, you know, has used from time to time, but is not a real, you know, a Judeo-Christian, you know, anthropology of you have, you know, the soul, which is good, and the body, which is bad. And our hope is to escape from the cell, the prison of this body, so that our soul can be free and to be in heaven with God forever. But no, this Judeo-Christian understanding that, you know, the body is created good, that all of creation has been created good. And God doesn't just want to redeem our souls. He wants to redeem our bodies, which means our bodies matter. But a lot of this transgender language seems to be coming from a place of, you know, the body is just something that's, you know, accidental to who I am. It's not a part of who I really am, and I can mix and match the way that I please. I'm not saying that everybody's experiencing this, that this is the language that they would use, but this is what it sounds like in a lot of the language that I'm hearing.
Yeah, and I mean, bringing that philosophy, but also going into the theology as well. Think about it. Jesus Christ showed us the body matters. He chose to become a human baby, a physical baby, and he chose to give us seven sacraments that have both a material reality, right, and the sacrament and also a mysterious reality that God's using, for example, marriage and having children, the physical reality of that, to give us graces. He's using the physical service of a priest to give us himself, the healing sacraments. I mean, baptism, physical water, we could go on and on about how God works in reality with material to bring about what is good and true and really radically transform it with his grace.
And not to mention the gift of our Blessed Mother, you know, God's own mother that he's given to us as a mother, that he did not overrule her free will, but almost asked her permission. You know, may I not just use you, but may I pour my life into the world through you and through your womanhood, through your femininity, through your motherhood, that God is sanctifying our experience as human beings, as, you know, not just bodies with souls and not just souls with bodies, but this, you know, composite where God wants to redeem every part of who we are. And we look to our Blessed Mother, and we look to the way that Jesus would, you know, in his earthiness, he would reach into the mud and wipe it onto people's eyes in order to heal them. He'd, you know, spit onto his hand and rub it in people's faces to heal them. You know, Jesus was reaching into creation to redeem creation, as, you know, as all the church fathers were saying at, you know, the earliest parts of the church. And how often do you hear this preached anymore? But God became man so that man might become God.
What are you going to do about this? We have the truth of Christ, the transformative graces of Christ, to really shake up this moral depravity, this confusion, this sickness of sin in our culture. We need to pray. We must fast. We must intercede for others. We need to put our butts physically in front of that abortion clinic and pray. We need to have the tough conversations, and that's what we're inviting you to with Trending.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So good to be back with you. Father Tim Grumbach is in studio here with me, and we're talking about sin and reconciliation, why it's so important. You know, we talked earlier today, Father Tim, about, you know, it's a new year, it's an ordinary time now. It's still time to grow, even though it's not Advent or Lent.
Right. Oh, confession. One of my favorite things to talk about, except there's so little. Oh, no, I can say a ton about it, but there's definitely things that I can't say about it. So.
You're like, I am sworn by the seal of the confessional. Yeah.
I like being a priest. You
know? You're like, please don't remove that from me. Okay, so we're going to talk. I think I want to start by mentioning how important it is that we're choosing the sacrament, and we're choosing to make it as a part of our weapon against the struggles of ourselves in our daily lives. It's a battle against ourselves in many ways that God is giving us the graces to overcome, to restore us to right relationship, both with ourselves and others, to find this harmony with ourselves and others, especially him, and to find this consistency in our behavior through reconciliation.
Yeah, one of the things I love to say about prayer itself is that prayer is not just something that helps our relationship with God, it is our relationship with God. And I think we can see the sacrament of confession in a very similar light, is that it's not just something that helps our relationship with God, it is a very important part of our relationship itself, that intimate encounter face-to-face with God and his mercy, and it's meant to be something that helps us grow. You know, the sacrament is not just, let me put my sins on a whiteboard and wipe them away, and then, well, I guess I'll write them back on the whiteboard eventually and go back and wipe them away. But the sacrament is meant to be an outpouring of grace. It's a growth in this relationship.
Well, and think about it too, when you were a child and maybe you did something wrong and you had great remorse because you knew your parents were upset. And, you know, you see a little child do this when they feel guilty and they go weeping and they're pulling on their parent. I'm sorry. You know, and they're crying and they feel better when they just know that their parent loves them still and it's okay and I forgive you. Well, all the more with God our Father. Not only can he say those words, but he can physically remove the damage of that sin from our lives.
Yeah, and it could be a frightening experience. I know. My own experience of going to confession, you know, that's one of the things that I think a lot of people may not think about, but how often we as priests must go to confession as well in order to be good confessors. But a lot of people, especially over social media, will be, you know, sharing with me some of their stories about so much anxiety about going to confession. I'm really afraid. I haven't been in so many years. I'm really afraid. And I just want to tell them, you know, recognizing that sometimes they'll have this genuine, clinical depression or anxiety. And so it's, you know, there's nothing I could just say, but like, oh, toughen up, just go, it'll be okay. But I want to invite everybody into this space of confession is so beautiful because it's the place where you go and the desire to be impressive goes mm-hmm. to die. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to be unimpressive in front of the priest.
And I mean, especially as a priest, being unimpressive to another priest, feeling judged, but remembering, no, that's Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That is the priest working in persona Christi to forgive your sins.
Yeah, it's so humbling as a priest or not as a priest to go into confession, but that's the point. It's meant to be a place where you go and you get to be unimpressive because in our culture, there's so much expectation to be impressive that confession sometimes is the only place where we can go and be unimpressive and know that there's going to be healing. Because of that, you know, it's just all this expectation of impressiveness, especially with high schoolers and younger. And I think everybody can say this too: is this expectation to be impressive and to have it all over our social media and everything like
everyone,
that.
Everyone, not just kids anymore.
Yeah. So it's almost as if the sacrament itself is healing, but at a practical level, just to go in and to be ourselves and stop trying to be someone that we're not. That is so healing in itself, mm-hmm. just at a psychological point. But
that's why you feel like you're skipping out. You're smiling as you walk out, even if it's with tears in your eyes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's right, because there's a healing that happens at a psychological level, but at a sacramental level. So it's not always about feeling. Mm-hmm. We can be, not everyone feels forgiven at the end of confession. Right. But what a beautiful act of trust it is to know that I've laid down what I've had to lay down. And I'm just going to entrust God with the forgiveness part, with the reconciliation part. And that's all we can do, even when we might be afraid that the language of the absolution hasn't been fully what the church intends.
Yeah, David, one of the listeners, actually messaged me and he was saying, hey, he really props to David because he really does have the habit, right, of regularly going to confession, the desire to be reunited to our Lord. And he's talking about how, he goes more than once a month for the most part. And from here, he says, but he notices the words of absolution are not always said. They're not always said clearly. Different words are said. Some of them are cut out. Sometimes, different things can be said. And this is something I've heard very often. And, I understand that there can be a lot of anxiety about this, especially, say, if you die in a car accident the very next day after this happening. So there are multiple nuances to this. But the ultimate question is, have I been absolved if the words of absolution do not seem correct to me?
Yeah, the words of absolution. God, the Father of mercies, through the death and resurrection of his Son, has reconciled the world to himself and has sent the Holy Spirit among us for the forgiveness of sins. Through the ministry of the church, may God grant you pardon and peace, and I absolve you from your sins in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Yes, I just said the words, but if you're listening to this, you're not absolved. I'm sorry. It doesn't work through the radio.
I know. I feel like I'm like prayer
But, the sacraments need to happen in person.
In person.
There are certain sacramentals that can work over, over media, but the sacraments themselves need to work in person. There needs to be the intention there.
Okay. So those are the full words, mm-hmm. the full paragraph, let's mm-hmm. say, of mm-hmm. the words of absolution. Now, maybe the priest misses one of those words, mm-hmm. or maybe he changes the words. A lot of priests anymore are trying to maybe even change it out of humility, not saying I absolve you, but Jesus mm-hmm. absolves you. But at the bare minimum, these are the words that absolutely must be said canonically for it to be a valid confession. So maybe the priest is rushing, or maybe the priest forgets to say everything, but he has to at the very least say, maybe he's praying in another language too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He has to at least say, I absolve you from your sins in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and make the sign of the cross over you. So if he maybe misses the rest of the paragraph, mm-hmm. of as long as those are said, you are forgiven. It is a valid confession.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned that sometimes the priest out of eight, I would say falsely placed humility, not say, I absolve you. I go back to, St. Bernard of Clairvaux writes beautifully about the moment of the Annunciation, kind of this moment waiting for Mary herself to say, yes, let it be done to me according to your word. And as if heaven and earth are waiting over that moment, waiting for her to say yes. And he says, now is not a time for virginal humility, virginal simplicity. Be bold, Mary. And so I ask my brother priests too to be bold in that. Don't be afraid to be a spiritual father at that moment, or be afraid, but do it anyways.
Well, this is the reality. you're doing this by the virtue of your holy orders, the humility that you have had in making that great commitment, those vows to our God, and recognizing that it is only God alone who can forgive sins. And so, in fact, it's almost more humble to recognize that God is working through me. You know, we read that in John chapter 20 that Jesus gives the people the authority, gives his priests the authority to forgive sins by himself. Mm-hmm. It is him working there. So when, you know, a priest falsely sets that humility, I get it. But again, it's Jesus working in the sacrament.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're acting in persona Christi, and not just in persona Christi, because every baptized Christian in some ways acts in persona Christi in the ways that, you know, through charity and through, you know, sacrificing and fasting and everything like that. But in a persona Christi capitis, in the person of Christ, the head, you know, that the sacraments are flowing through the sacrament of holy orders through the priest. But ultimately it's Christ's work. You know, we hear the word liturgy, and sometimes, well-intentioned, they'll speak of, well, the liturgy is the people's work. Yes, partly, but it's not the people's work unless it's first Christ's work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and we can look too to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I'm reading through the Catechism of the Catholic Church, the whole area on the sacrament of confession. I think for everyone would be so beneficial. It's not very long, but I'm going to point you to the Catechism of the Catholic Church at paragraph 1452. And it talks about how God can forgive these sins, these venial sins and mortal sins, if we truly are sorry, if we're contrite, right? And truly seeking his forgiveness, and we have the desire of going to confession and say, today I commit a mortal sin. But, and I right now recognize, because we should daily be doing an examination of conscience, I am sorry for my sins. I have true remorse. I have intention to overcome this, and I have intention to go to confession. But say I die tonight. Am I forgiven of my sins? Do I die with mortal sin? Well, the Catechism of the Catholic Church talks about how if you are truly contrite and you have the intention of going to confession, not just a like, oh yeah, I'll go next year, I'll go once a year because it's required, but I'm going to go to confession as soon as I can, that you're not dying in a state of mortal sin, because God is greater than the sacraments in those moments.
Right, and the Catechism in the context of baptism especially, but it can refer to, you know, most of the sacraments also, is that with that intention, and not being able to approach the sacrament.
Remember, not being able to.
Right, yeah. So that it says that we are bound to the sacraments. God has bound, you know, the salvation to the sacraments, and we are bound to the sacraments. But God is not bound to the sacraments. You know, there are, you know, through the sacraments, God has bound himself to these human signs that are not just signs, but symbols in the realist sense.
Mysteries of how he transforms us.
Yeah, so they bear that which they affect. You know, they actually affect that which they signify, actually. That, you know, God is, in a way, when we're performing the sacraments, experiencing the sacraments more so, that God is kind of binding his work to those sacraments, but he is not ultimately bound to them. And that, you know, if we are unable, even though we have the intention and the contrition to approach the sacrament of reconciliation, and there's some danger of death in front of us, you know, is that going to limit God's ability to show mercy to us? The Catechism will tell us no, because while we are bound to the sacraments, God in a mysterious way is not.
Right. And we have to remember that. And when we're talking about reconciliation, maybe you or someone you know struggles with, how can a priest have the authority to forgive my sins? Maybe you even look at some of the scriptures, God alone forgives sins. Go to John chapter 20, right after Jesus is risen from the dead, and he's speaking to the apostles and he's interacting with them, and he gives his authority, not their authority, but by his authority, the ability to forgive sins, to bind and loose, and how important that is. So my question for you, what sin is it that's preventing you from growing? What repetitive sin are you committing? Let's turn and use this year to change in ordinary time.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit timory.com.